Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid.
This is definitely a blue-collar community, and I'm kind of a blue-collar guy.
Rick Sealscott didn't see himself as a farmer, but wasn't about to sell his grandparents' Ohio farm. An Avangrid wind farm pays millions to the community and landowners like him each year.
Farming's up and down, but the wind turbines give us steady income. We're holding on to the farm, and we're making money. And I would absolutely do it again.
Discover where energy meets humanity at avangrid.com.
A couple of weeks ago, Matt Apuzzo was on the show telling the definitive story of how James Comey handled the two major investigations that define the 2016 campaign. It was the episode from Monday, April 24th. So we're putting the full episode back in your feed again so you can listen in light of James Comey's firing on Tuesday. Take a listen. From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, it was an election year no one could have predicted. Both candidates for president under investigation by the FBI. And at the center of it all was one man, James Comey, making calculations that could shape history. A New Times investigation tells the definitive story of what Comey did and why he did it. It's Monday, April 24th. My colleague Matt Apuzzo tells the story.
On July 5th, 2016, reporters here in Washington got an email from the FBI basically summoning us to a briefing that morning, which never happens, right? You don't really get a lot of unplanned hurry up to the FBI. So this is weird right off the bat.
I'm Brian Fallon. I was the national press secretary on the Clinton campaign. That morning, we were in the dark as much as anybody else. I was left to sort of call my own contacts in the reporting world to ask if they were off the record being given any tip as to, you know, what the nature of the announcement would be.
Right away, the speculation is, well, maybe this is about Hillary Clinton and her emails. So Jim Comey, the FBI director, walks in to this big room.
Good morning.
And he starts to talk.
I'm here to give you an update on the FBI's investigation of Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email system during her time as Secretary of State.
Everybody huddled around the televisions that we had on the periphery of the open bullpen-style campaign headquarters office and could have heard a pin drop.
I want to tell you what we did, I want to tell you what we found, and I want to tell you what we're recommending to the Department of Justice.
So Comey goes through his script.
This is going to be an unusual statement in at least a couple of ways.
This 15-minute script. And
any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position,
he's really, really criticizing her.
Should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation.
Any reasonable person in Ms. Clinton's position should have known better.
There is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
The way she handled classified information was extremely careless. I mean, it was so blistering that in Brooklyn, all of her campaign aides are sort of standing around campaign headquarters watching television. There's a part of them that's saying, "What is she going to get charged?"
We also developed evidence that the security culture of the State Department was generally lacking in the kind of care for classified information that's found elsewhere in the U.S. government.
And it's building up to this. Where are we going? And only in the last 2 minutes does he get to his conclusion, which is,
as a result, although the Department of Justice makes final decisions on matters like this, we are expressing to Justice our view that no charges are appropriate in this case.
No charges are appropriate in this case.
There was, I remember, a spontaneous burst of applause from some of the younger staffers. But several others of us that had been listening realized that we would be living with some of the damning descriptions of her conduct, even though he was essentially clearing her. In my experience, I could not think back and recall any instance where a case that produced no criminal charges was concluded in this way.
So what's so remarkable about how he handled this.
Well, what's not remarkable, right? I mean, so first we'll start with, like, this is the FBI director alone talking about closing a case when prosecutors are the ones who ultimately decide close a case or prosecute a case. Second, the way it normally works is when a case gets closed, you say nothing, right? You just close the case. The idea being the FBI investigates you and throws its resources, and if they don't have a charge, then they don't go out and talk about how badly you behaved. And then, of course, it's July, right? I mean, we're heading in towards convention season. Hillary Clinton's on her way towards the nomination. And here's the FBI director getting up and basically giving her a scolding on national television. The story had been, well, Jim Comey felt like he needed to do this because Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, had had this very ill-advised meeting.
So this morning there are questions about what could have been discussed during a private meeting between former President Bill Clinton.
With President Bill Clinton.
And Attorney General Loretta Lynch yesterday?
You can't make this up.
No.
Aboard her airplane.
Very interesting meeting on the tarmac at Sky Harbor International Airport.
This was a sort of unplanned private 20-minute chat on her airplane.
I did see President Clinton at the Phoenix airport as I was leaving, and he spoke to myself and my husband on the plane. Our conversation was a great deal about his grandchildren. It was primarily social and about our travels.
That he mentioned. Literally in the final days of the Clinton investigation.
I don't know how Loretta Lynch survives this.
I would like to see her step down.
Opened the Justice Department up to all these calls that she had to recuse herself. It really put the investigative team on its heels. And so the story had been like this crystallized it for Comey. Comey had to do this himself without Loretta Lynch because this was a mess. And so the FBI needed to be the face of the closing of the Clinton investigation. As often is the case, the actual story is much cooler and much more complicated than that.
Matt, along with three of our colleagues in the Washington Bureau, has spent the months since the election reporting what actually happened. Here's what they found.
So, from the beginning of the investigation in July of 2015, Jim Comey and the people around him began seeing things that made them skeptical or suspicious about the way the Justice Department was handling the case. The Justice Department, after initially confirming that there had been this sort of criminal referral that kicked off the case, they walked that back and said, well, no, it wasn't a criminal referral. And so there became this view among senior people at the FBI that the Justice Department was giving a talking point to the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Doing her a favor.
Yeah, and boy, did she take that talking point, right? I mean, once they said it's not a criminal referral, it's a security referral, she seized on that.
I think it's a security review. It is a security review, and there are lots of those that are conducted.
That was like the first thing. The second thing was in the fall, as Comey's getting ready to do a meeting with reporters and is getting ready to testify on the Hill, he knows he's going to get asked about the Clinton investigation. And Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, says to Comey, you know, when you're asked, don't call it an investigation. Call it a matter. And Comey thought that was silly and disingenuous. I mean, at this point in the fall of 2015, everybody knew this investigation was underway. And in fact, he got kind of like ribbed by one of the prosecutors on his way out of the meeting. He was like, oh, I guess you're the Federal Bureau of Matters now. And then there's this other mysterious thing that pops up. This like secret document.
And what was that document?
So when computer hackers from overseas break into American systems and steal stuff, the United States government and its allies can sometimes kind of like peek into foreign networks and see what has been stolen. And in one hack, a Russian hack, one of many Russian hacks, a document got taken that was written by a Democratic operative. And that operative said, and it was either a memo or an email, it's been described to us as both, Loretta Lynch will keep this case, the Clinton investigation, from getting too far afield. She'll keep things in line.
Whoa.
Right. So now, read one way, that is just the standard Washington, like, I know what's going on, kind of like BS chatter, right? That like happens at every dumb party in the city. Read another way, you could say, does this Democratic operative have some sort of inside information? So the story as it is told by people around Comey is that Comey becomes very concerned that this document, if it leaks, will damage the credibility of the Justice Department. And so he can't let the Justice Department go out and be the face of closing the Clinton investigation, because then, boom, that document shows up on WikiLeaks, that document shows up somewhere, and it's like, oh my God.
But was that really the case?
There are real holes in the account that I've just laid out here. If Jim Comey actually thought that Loretta Lynch was compromised, isn't he obligated to say, I think the Attorney General of the United States is compromised and she should recuse herself from this investigation, right? And that doesn't happen. So right off the bat, I'm wondering, well, how seriously was this taken? And at the Justice Department, the feeling was this was just another thing that Jim Comey, the guy who always wants to be at the center of everything, is using to justify putting himself at the center of everything.
The grandson of a patrolman who worked his way up to lead the Yonkers Police Department, Jim has law enforcement in his blood.
So this is a guy who's like very keenly attuned to how he looks and what the politics, like what his image is as independent.
To know Jim Comey is also to know his fierce independence and his deep integrity. He's that rarity in Washington sometimes. He doesn't care about politics. He only cares about getting the job done.
I mean, this is a guy who at one point said, oh, I would never play basketball with Barack Obama because that would be an appearance of being too chummy. And he relishes in this like independent vibe he's got. And that's he has really cultivated that for a long time.
It was Wednesday, March the 10th, 2004.
And how do you remember that date so well?
And then there's the story that makes Jim Comey's career.
That night was probably the most difficult night of my professional life, so it's not something I forget.
It was March of 2004, and the Bush administration was engaged in a secret program to tap phone calls without court approval.
He's the deputy attorney general at the time.
A week before the deadline to reauthorize the program, Attorney General John Ashcroft met with his top deputy, James Comey. They agreed the program was illegal and should not be reauthorized. A few hours later, Ashcroft became violently ill with pancreatitis.
And he like jumps into an unmarked car and is speeding with the FBI director at the time with lights and sirens flashing. And he's going to the hospital where John Ashcroft, the attorney general, is hospitalized.
I got out of the car and ran up the stairs with my security detail.
What was your concern? You were in obviously a huge hurry.
And he's headed there to head off Bush administration White House officials who want Ashcroft to reauthorize this secret data mining program that Comey and Ashcroft think is illegal.
And, wait, and they want him to reauthorize it from a hospital bed.
From a hospital bed, right. Yeah, and there's this standoff in the hospital room with the chief of staff and the White House counsel on one side, and it's Comey and then FBI Director Robert Mueller on the other side. You know, the threat is we're going to resign if you try to reauthorize this thing we think is illegal. And Ashcroft sits up and says, it doesn't matter what I think. That's the attorney general, right? Because Comey's the acting attorney general while Ashcroft is in the hospital.
I was very upset. I was angry.
And that moment just seals the deal for Jim Comey.
We all understood what was going on, and we were trying to do what was best for the country and the Department of Justice. But it was a very hard night.
Jim Comey is an independent guy. He'll stand up for what he thinks is right. That's the moment. And then the other one that is informative is after the massacre in Charleston.
Please answer.
where Dylann Roof walked into a black church and opened fire.
911, what's the address of the emergency?
Please, Emmanuel Church, there's plenty of people shot down here. Please send somebody right away.
Emmanuel Church?
Emmanuel.
In the aftermath of that, the FBI realized that its background check system had screwed up and that it had allowed Dylann Roof to get a gun that had everything worked appropriately, he probably wouldn't have been able to get. Now, this would have been a huge story had, you know, I figured it out ahead of time, right? I mean, we would have gone big with this. Any news organization would have gone big with this. This would have been a real question about the competency of the FBI, you know, to keep guns out of the hands of, you know, criminals or the mentally, you know, unstable. So what Comey does is he pulls all of the FBI beat reporters into a room at the FBI, and he walked everybody through like the step-by-step. Here's how the background check system worked, and in this case, here's where it went wrong, and here's why. That's classic Comey. It's both like transparency, but it's also like incredible savvy to understand how to protect that institution, right? I mean, he understood that, you know, if he got out in front of it, if he pulled the reporters in who covered the FBI and he explained it to them, that he'd take his lumps, but ultimately the institution would come out ahead.
And that's what he did, or thought he was doing, with the Hillary Clinton investigation.
Right. I mean, this is all just play. This is learned behavior, right? You know, skew towards transparency, but also with an eye towards how this is going to play in a way that most FBI directors, I don't think, typically do. And I think a lot of people would say that FBI directors shouldn't. But it's always worked for him. I mean, it's always worked for him when he sort of grabs hold of it, puts himself in front of the cameras, and just owns it.
It's always worked for him until now. Now comes a remarkable twist in what is already a pretty remarkable story. Later that July, just weeks after Comey announces he's closing the investigation into Clinton's emails, a new investigation is opened by the FBI. Matt, what is that investigation?
Well, that investigation is the investigation.
Tonight, FBI Director James Comey, for the first time, publicly confirming that the FBI is investigating alleged links between Russia and associates of the Trump campaign, an investigation that began last July.
That's the investigation into whether members of the Trump campaign were in collusion with Russian agents.
And how does Jim Comey respond to that?
So the first thing that's really interesting is he puts the same guy, right? I mean, it's like literally the same guy to supervise the Trump campaign investigation as had just done the Hillary Clinton investigation. So, you know, if you think you had a stressful year, right? I mean, you know, the press conference gets held, this thing is over, and then boom, now, you know, he's on to his next presidential, you know, political nightmare investigation.
That's where the similarities end and the differences begin. Comey declined to say that the FBI was investigating the Trump campaign. It was only in March, long after the election, that Comey even confirmed the existence of such an investigation.
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election.
The Trump investigation begins in the highest secrecy at the FBI.
Why does the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton become so public from Comey? And why does the FBI's investigation of potential collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign not become public?
Well, there's a couple explanations. And the first is that Hillary Clinton's investigation was public, you know, from the starting gun. And there was no escaping that. The second is that they talked publicly about Hillary Clinton's investigation when in July they thought they were done. They thought it was over. Whereas in 2016, mm-hmm. summer and fall, they were really just starting to get a handle on what was going on with the Trump campaign and Russia. And they didn't know where it was going. And it was all classified, you know, ongoing. And they don't usually talk about this stuff. But I get that if you are just watching the FBI from afar, it looks like Jim Comey's a lot more willing to sort of throw the rule book out when it comes to Hillary Clinton, but has to follow the rules when it comes to Donald Trump.
Our top story this morning.
And then,
with just over a week before Election Day, Hillary Clinton's campaign is fighting a political firestorm that appeared to be put out in July.
The Clinton investigation that we thought was over in July came back in a crazy way.
Just when you think it can't get weirder, tonight a federal sexting investigation into Anthony Weiner leading to an October shocker, putting Hillary Clinton on the defensive. The FBI announcing that it's investigating newly discovered evidence related to her emails.
What really put the FBI in the middle of the political firestorm was the decision in late October to send a letter to Congress saying, essentially, we've reopened the Clinton investigation because we want to take a look at some of these new emails and see if there's anything in them.
A lot of us were at the headquarters in our open-air bullpen office environment, and somebody in our communications division literally stood up out of their chair at their desk and exclaimed that Jason Chaffetz had just tweeted that an investigation had been reopened. He was the one that was one of the recipients of the letter that James Comey sent, and he was the first to publicly disclose it. I immediately thought that that could not possibly be true. But then moments later, another reporter tweeted out an actual screen capture of the letter itself, and upon reading it, I knew that we had a situation in our hands.
We are 11 days out from perhaps the most important national election of our lifetimes.
To us, it was shocking.
Voting is already underway in our country. So the American people deserve to get the full and complete facts immediately.
This was such a provocative, incendiary act, and we were powerless to know what the contents of these materials that he was citing in the letter were.
Because right now, your guess is as good as mine, and I don't think that's good enough.
Once we learned the nature of what he was looking at, it became even more perplexing to try to understand why he would have sent this letter to Congress first before he had actually examined the contents of the emails. It ended up only taking them a week and conclude that they were largely duplicative with what had already been turned over. There was nothing that required a true formal reopening of the case. And so why not take the step of looking at that and learning that before you set everybody's hair on fire on October 28th by sending a dispatch to Congress? That's what doesn't make any sense.
A lot of people have no idea that Trump is headed for a historic defeat.
We've got the national poll that shows her up by 9. Another one shows her up by 14. Another one shows her up by 3.
I wonder, for James Comey, if there was an assumption at this moment in his head about what was going to happen.
Hillary Clinton today is more likely to win in a landslide that would not only have an impact on this race, but realign the country.
Well, it was the assumption in everybody's head.
Okay, so everybody is saying, most analysts are saying that Hillary Clinton's going to win in a landslide. And
all
Ohio
the polls showed that she was going to win. And, you know, the FBI has been criticized here for being political. And our reporting actually shows no indication that sort of the question of partisanship or Republican or Democrat ever came up. But political considerations were made. And the calculation is, if she wins and we didn't tell anybody that we had these emails and it proves to be a problem, we're ruined. Politically, we're ruined. We're going to – I mean, they're going to shut the building down, right? The Republicans will have a field day. Congress is going to destroy us. You told us this investigation was closed and you didn't tell us it had been reopened. Mm-hmm. And now you find emails that are problematic. I mean, this is their nightmare. But by the book, none of that stuff's supposed to matter.
What does the book say?
We don't talk about our investigative steps, and we don't talk about ongoing investigations, and we don't do things publicly that have the potential to influence political outcomes close to an election. Like, those are the kind of the three big rules that got turned on their head here. The thinking was, We have to do this. We have to look at the emails, and the FBI might not survive the fallout if it looks like we're trying to cover up for the next president.
But of course, that doesn't justify it. The job of FBI director is a tough job. You're put in positions where you have to deal with the fallout for following protocols and the rules. And so I don't think that it was appropriate for him, even realizing and acknowledging how much political pressure he was under, to let that affect his actions.
Brian, do you think that Comey acted out of partisanship?
I do not. I think that he was in a politically tricky situation. He put a thumb on the scale in terms of how much he editorialized about Hillary Clinton's conduct in that July 5th press conference for the express purpose of trying to seem like he was Solomon splitting the baby, of exonerating her on the one hand, but providing all this damning descriptions of her conduct to try to arm her critics with something and so that they wouldn't be left with nothing post-July 5th.
Do you think that Jim Comey is the reason that Hillary Clinton lost the presidency?
I think there were some fundamental errors that we made from a tactical standpoint on the campaign. I also think that there were some fundamental factors about the state of the race in 2016 that did not become apparent to us until it was too late. So, for instance, I think that it was much – the mood of the electorate was much more in favor of a change election than we realized. But I do think that despite all that, we were poised to overcome all of that, both our own errors and some of the fundamental headwinds that we were facing. We were poised to overcome that, albeit very narrowly. But I think that, yes, in the last 10 days, the effect of the Jim Comey letter was determinative.
Political journey with an astounding upset victory. Donald J. Trump will become the 45th president of the United States, defeating Hillary Clinton in a campaign unlike anything we've seen in our lifetime.
Donald Comey tells his friends and his team that he's got no regrets, that, you know, that he made the best decision and he was transparent about the decisions he made in the moment.
Matt, does Jim Comey see himself as a victim of what I think we can all agree is a pretty remarkable set of circumstances that he couldn't possibly have predicted?
I wouldn't say Comey thinks of himself as a victim. I mean, I think he's very astute to the fact that he's in the seat, right? I mean, he chose to be in the seat, and that comes with the responsibility of making these calls. So I don't think he thinks he's a victim, but I do think he believes outsiders and even people like us, you know, reporters who spend time on this, will never really understand what was like to make those calls. Jim Comey in 2016 was a creature of circumstance, for sure, but he made his own decisions. This wasn't a guy who fell into anything. It just so happened he got both presidential candidates in 1 year in two insane cases, and now we're all seeing him as a major player in this election.
Last month, James Comey gave some indication that he may have finally had enough of being Washington's Lone Ranger.
As you know, our practice is not to confirm the existence of ongoing investigations, especially those investigations that involve classified matters. But in unusual circumstances, where it is in the public interest, it may be appropriate to do so, as Justice Department policies recognize. This is one of those circumstances.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.
What can a painting of Queen Elizabeth I teach us about power? And how did tattoos become both revered and reviled? Hi, I'm Isabella Rossellini. And in the first episode of This Is Not a Beauty Podcast, we'll hear from a top Capitol Hill makeup artist and meet the world's oldest tattooist, to understand how beauty shapes politics. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform, brought to you by L'Oréal Group.